So we were talking earlier about how yesterday Oprah played a clip from Tom Shadyac's movie, I Am. Tom was her guest that had me in it, which was kind of cool. That was quite a surprise. And it was one of my favorite messages, actually, that democracy is in our genes and that it's expressed by every animal from bees to the highest primates. And there's good, solid scientific evidence to back it up, that we are born as cooperators, not competitors. Now, on the other side of that argument, on the extreme other side of that argument, is Alyssa Rosenbaum. Alyssa Rosenbaum, of course, changed her name to Ayn Rand when she moved to the United States from St. Petersburg after her father's pharmacy was nationalized in the Bolshevik Revolution. Well, actually, after she went to college, after her father's pharmacy was nationalized, and came up with this idea that the, in Atlas Shrugged, wrote this novel that, first of all, James Herson is with us. He's an author, commentator, news analyst, law professor. LeftCoastReport.com is where he writes. James, first of all, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. Before I say anything about this movie, I wanted to introduce you so that if I get things wrong, you can correct me.
Sure. Well, you started with Alyssa Rosenbaum, so you're already ahead of most of the people that admire Ayn Rand. Do you know her name?
Yeah. Well, when I was a teenager, I sort of read Atlas Shrugged. I tried to get through it two or three times. I finally bought the Cliff Notes version, which is actually written by Yaron Brook, a friend of mine who is the he's become a friend over the years from being a guest on our program so many times, who is the president of the Ayn Rand Foundation, AynRand.org. And it's actually a very, very good, 80, 90 page summary of a 1,000 page book. And which this movie is, super condensed this movie down. But the basic premise, and correct me if I have this wrong, James Herson, the basic premise of Atlas Shrugged is that John Galt invents this machine that is basically an infinite energy source. It uses air pressure to create energy that can be used to power anything from a train to a city. And he is so offended by the idea that government wants a piece of the action, or that they want to overregulate him, or that these petty bureaucrats are running the show or whatever, that he goes off and starts this place called Atlantis, and all of the big industrialists in the country, the really, truly brilliant people who run the giant corporations, the producers, to use Ayn Rand's word, the job creators, to use the modern Republican term, decide to go say, what the hell, I'm leaving here, I'm leaving America, and I'm going to go off to Atlantis. And I'm assuming that part's going to come in part two and part three. They're disappearing throughout the movie in part one.
Mm-hmm.
And so do I have it right so far?
Yeah, pretty much. You spun it a bit, but I think the broad theme is that the most creative, the most influential, the most productive citizens of society are essentially engaged in the equivalent of a strike.
Right. And yes, a nationwide strike, and they either
mystery element that they're disappearing, et cetera. And by the way, when you talk about this, it's interesting to describe this tale, but two things come to mind to me as someone that covers Hollywood. One is that I don't think this is her best story. If I were the person making the film, I would have remade The Fountainhead, the Gary Cooper, Patricia Neal. That's already
the one where the woman who gets raped decides that she ultimately loves being raped.
Yeah, but mainly it's about this struggle of Howard Roark, the young individualistic architect.
But Howard Roark was based, the archetype for Howard Roark was a mass murderer.
Well, perhaps in inspiration aspects of a mass murder.
Well, no, she wrote this at length. I mean, this William Hickman in 1927 kidnapped and murdered and dismembered 12-year-old Marion Parker, and Ayn Rand, Alyssa Rosenbaum, wrote about him, the guy that she made into the hero in Fountainhead, said, other people do not exist for him, and he does not see why they should. Hickman had no regard whatsoever for all the society holds sacred, and with a consciousness all his own, he was the true, innate psychology of a Superman. He can never realize and feel other people. I mean, and this was her praise of him. And Howard Roark, in The Fountainhead, she says, quote, he was born without the ability to consider others, end quote. To me, that sounds like a sociopath admiring a sociopath.
Well, what it comes from, though, is her field was philosophy, and she ended up...
She actually studied politics in Kiev.
Friedrich Nietzsche, and which you must with objectivism. See, this is, I have an issue with Ayn Rand's objectivism because I do think it lacks an ability to account for any kind of moral or ethical values.
Well, and it doesn't just lack it; it rejects it. I mean, she says that people who objected to what William Hickman did are the parasites and leeches of our society.
But she has one sort of ethical mandate that she kind of pulls out of the air, and talks about egoistic ethics. But basically, I think that's the weakest part of her message.
But that's the
teaching.
Essence of her message.
No,
I mean,
really
the essence
isn't.
Of her message is said by one of the characters in the movie. Louise and I saw the movie over the weekend. He says, you know, she says, "Don't you care about anything but making money?" And he says, "No, that's my number one priority," or words to that effect. That is the essence of Ayn Rand's philosophy. Let me ask you just a really simple question here. Since the premise of the book, Atlas Shrugged, is that all the really bright people, it's basically all these industrialists, and in the movie, I found it very bizarre that the industrialist, actually, she got her money by inheriting it from her grandfather. But in any case, that if these people all left... What if the CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies in America, Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, Robert Ben-Moshe at AIG, these guys that crashed the economy, these guys, you know, Stephen J. Hemsley, who, you know, for his first 5 years as head of United Healthcare took $477 million. What if all these guys vanished? Do you genuinely believe that there's not enough talent left in the United States that would be willing to work for even one-tenth of $477 million? Who could step up to the plate and do their jobs?
See, I don't think that if you took the heads of the Fortune 500, that would fit the criteria that Ayn Rand talks about in Atlas Shrugged, because her criteria was not necessarily, you know, isolating executives. It would be those executives. A better example would be Steve Jobs. A better example would be those that show innovation and that sort of thing. And this is, it's a parable. And I think that's, the popularity, that's why I'm saying, I don't think the story is particularly compelling. I think the Fountainhead's probably a better story, and the best story would be a biography of Ayn Rand, a film biography, because she's a fascinating figure. But the notion is that if you take away people's incentive, that they will produce less. And that if you take away,
but history doesn't show that.
It's kind of like the last.
But history doesn't show that. During the time that the top tax rate was 91% from 1940 to 1986, we had, or over 74%. It was 90% for much of that time. We had the highest level of productivity in the history of this nation and of the world. So A, it doesn't show that, and B, to use your Steve Jobs example. Steve Jobs didn't create something out of nothing. Steve Jobs saw an operating system that was developed by, I'm forgetting the name of the company, but it was called the Star, as I recall, operating system, and Xerox. It was developed by Xerox, and said, this is cool, and he created a modified version of it. There is no such thing as an inventor who doesn't stand on the shoulders of others.
No, you cannot. Look, iPod, iPhone, iPad.
You don't
something
think that any of those things
of
just
nothing.
Are you suggesting that they all came out of thin air?
They came out of his and his group's innovation out of their minds.
The very last piece of them may have, but every invention is the top, is the capstone of a pyramid of hundreds of thousands of people before them.
Well, absolutely, but it takes that innovative spark, and prosperity and jobs come from that innovative spark. And if you look at those tax rates you're talking about, you can isolate the Clinton administration when, in fact, capital gains tax were cut.
Okay. James, we're out of time. I'm sorry. People can read it at leftcoastreport.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And James, thanks for dropping by today. I appreciate the conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Good talking with you.